So we bookended that, and we bought time. We're time traveling today. God, you gotta love it. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. It is Sunday, September 21st, and my name is still Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Still Bill Cundiff?
Still Bill Cundiff.
Still today.
And I'm still Kathy.
Officer Joe is engrossed in something on his computer. But, okay, to do my top of the hour commercial. No, on Prop 50. If you do not know what Prop 50 is, I'm not going to go into it. No, I am. They're redistricting the state of California and basically wiping out seats.
I like how you say they.
They, them. Well, we have an independent redistricting commission that we voted in that is part of our state constitution.
And they're bypassing that.
And, yes, the state legislature.
Thumbing their nose at the law.
Yep, they decided we're going to try to get the public to violate the state constitution and skip over it for the next three elections. So it would be 2026, 28, and 30. And then supposedly the Citizens Redistricting Commission will come back. The odd part is this is all being done because of President Trump, who has nothing to do with this, and Texas, which also has nothing to do with it, mm-mm, because the Texas legislature was sued and had to redraw their lines, and it has nothing to do with President Trump. So if you've been told that, do more homework. And if you would like to do more homework, you can find it at ShastaGOP.com. If you live outside of Shasta County, go there anyway. You can get to the California GOP from there. And at ShastaGOP.com, you will see locations for signs. You will see flyers. You can print stuff you can post online and information so that you can be smart. Because your ballot's going to show up in about less than a month, like 3 weeks. So you'll see it the first part of October. Yeah, because today is the 21st of September, 2025. So sorry if we air this in a different, after the election. You'll just have to, get over it. So our guest today is Jay LeBlanc. We keep calling him Jesse because that's his real name. But he ditched the other letters and just went with the first one and just goes by Jay, which I'm good with. Having a short name myself, I just use the one I have. But I wanted to go back on today's program. Darn it, I changed the page. But he is an advisor for Every Brain Matters, which is an amazing organization, and there is just a wealth of knowledge there. On the page for today's show, we have linked a ton of information from him. We will never be able to cover it all. And so that's why we post a page for every show. It is free to listen, commercial free also, so save you a little bit of time if you listen in the archive. And we don't care what you do with it. We don't have a copyright. So if you want to make a copy, send it to your friends, post it somewhere. We're not going to come after you and tell you owe us money. You don't owe us money. We do this as a public service.
Tell 10 friends to tell 10 friends.
There you go. All right. So, sorry, Jay. We cut you off at the end of the top of the hour there. It's one of those things we have no flex with. Go back to where you were, if you can time travel that direction for us.
No, I'm glad we did, because this is something that people need to be aware of, and it just shows how insidious this industry is. I mean, it's so much like the tobacco industry, as we alluded to before. So THC, CBD, all of these cannabinoids, they're basically what you call lipids. You know, it's a plant oil, okay? Does that make sense?
Okay.
You know, just say like sesame seed oil, olive oil, something along those lines. It may be the viscosity or thickness may be a little bit more, but it's basically a plant-derived oil. That's why it readily absorbs into fat-containing organs, you know, your brain or lipid-containing organs like your brain, liver, et cetera, and why a blood test, which is water-based, doesn't really tell a whole lot. But what they're doing is, we all know the proverbial saying, oil and water don't mix, right?
Yeah.
So how do you mix THC in a liquid or water-based beverage? Well, they use an emulsifier, but it gets better than that. What they do is they nano, quote-unquote, nano-emulsify the THC or CBD molecules, mostly THC, I would probably say at this point, into very, very small, minute elements so that it readily mixes in water. And what it does, it increases the bioavailability of that product. You know, when it goes, you know how you hear these stories, oh, I took an edible and it didn't kick in an hour, hour and a half or so, so I took another one. And then they wound up getting OD on THC. Well, and some of the people advertise, you know, these drinks, or they also put it in edibles. They nano-emulsified and they put it in, they encapsulate it too. But, you know, some people are advertising it kicks in 15 minutes. Some of the drinks kick in 30 minutes or less. That's what's being, quote-unquote, advertised. And using this nano-emulsification that they use to, you know, allow it to mix, you know, into a liquid or water-based drink. So, you know, they're able to have it where you don't have to shake it, so it stays in suspension, the THC. But also, as a byproduct, it kicks in that much quicker. So to me, that's telling me that it could be even be more addictive. And what's interesting is, you know, there's this website, Cannabis Science Tech, and they call it cannabinoid delivery system. In fact, the title of the article is Small Wonders, Nanoemulsification Technology for Cannabinoid Delivery. Well, are you all familiar with Jeffrey Wigand and the 60-minute interview back in 1994? Probably not. I did some studying. But have you ever watched the movie The Insider, which is worth watching with Russell Crowe? It's sort of a dramatized version of basically the insider, the tobacco whistleblower.
Oh,
Jeffrey Wigand.
Yep.
So this is an excerpt that I have in a paper that I wrote. This is an excerpt from 2/4/1996, a 60-minute interview between Mike Wallace and Jeffrey Wigand. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but, this, you know, Wigand makes a statement. He said, they're in the nicotine delivery business. And then Mike Wallace asks a question, and that's what cigarettes are for. And Wigand says, most certainly, it's a delivery device for nicotine. And I want to say that's the first time I've ever heard, and this is in the movie, too. They bring this out in the movie. I mean, they do a really good job. I mean, it's dramatized, yes. But if you read the actual interview and you look at the job that Russell Crowe does, he picks up a lot of Jeffrey's mannerisms, and the statements are almost verbatim from the actual interview. It's worth watching because you can see the parallels so clear. But it's funny that the hemp industry, or cannabinoid industry, I should say, cover all of it, hemp and marijuana, that, you know, small wonder, nano-emulsification technology for cannabinoid delivery. So they're in the same business, but it's just an example of what they're doing to manipulate, just like THCP. They're manipulating these base molecules with, you know, synthetic chemical processes to make them even more powerful, more addictive, stronger. And the same thing here. You know, your edibles and these THC-infused drinks, which I think is going to be the downfall of so many people, you know, they're making them, instead of taking an hour and a half to kick in, they're going to be kicking in 10, 15, 20 minutes, somewhere up in there, very, very quickly. And one of the, you know, one of the anecdotes during the testimony, which is available online, when Dan Patrick had one of his first press conferences, they had a police officer, a sheriff from, I think, the Dallas area, and he made the statement, and I believe him, that he knows of a restaurant that had to stop serving, and these were legal in Texas because it's, you know, it meets the hemp criteria of 0.3% or less THC. But they had to stop serving them because they would give a customer one drink and these people went a little, I wouldn't say wonky, but they were definitely intoxicated. So they stopped serving them because of the liability involved. And that kind of like, whoa. So you can see how that's an issue, especially if they're using this nano-emulsification technology to make it you know, to basically, quote-unquote, kick in quicker. And, again, this applies to edibles, too. They're using the same technology on edibles, which I never knew until maybe about a month ago when I did some more research.
And I think it's important to state, Jesse, that none of this is evaluated by the FDA, and none of this could pass any FDA legitimate testing. And individuals who use them may believe they don't have any psychoactive properties because they're labeled as a hemp product, but there's a lot of concerns around the formulations, the purity and the dosage, and the unintended product exposure to children and pets, and the adverse effects, which are what you just stated, vomiting, hallucinations, and loss of consciousness. So this stuff can kill you in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of sad, and what's really sad is this. I know a parent really, really well, and her loved one who happened to use and got addicted, but, you know, he's in recovery and he's doing fine now. But one of the first things he said, he was in a young adult, over 21, but what's interesting, he says, he's a rule follower, is that he said he wouldn't have tried it if it wasn't legal.
Ooh.
So, you know, when Abbott or whoever, you know, like, you know, all these senators, representatives who passed the 2018 farm bill, and especially in light of, and even in 2019 in Texas, they passed a similar bill that kind of facilitated all of this. I mean, there's a lot of culpability to go around because they basically said this is a legal substance and it's quote unquote, I wouldn't say they said this verbatim, but they were inferring that it's safe and it's not. And that's really, really troubling. And if I can, just give me, could I have a minute to read this quote from a FDA warning letter? This is verbatim from this warning letter. If you could go online, you can just type in FDA warning letter, warning letters, you'll get a page pop up, and then right at the top, there's a lot of information you think you need to fill in, but you don't need to. Up at the top, you can type in CBD, THC. The easiest thing is to type in CBD. And if you go back to 2024, one of the warning letters states this, and they state this in other ones too. And this is quote unquote from the FDA. We note that your firm sells food products, and from an FDA perspective, food includes drinks and beverages. And I looked up the difference between drink and beverage. A drink you drink or gulp, and in a beverage is you sip. There's a subtle difference. But bottom line, I know it's ridiculous. It's a play on words. But anyway,
a little weird.
Food products includes all of this that contain cannabinoids other than Delta-8 THC. This letter was specific to Delta-8, but they're saying any cannabinoid. We know of no basis to conclude that any use in food of a cannabinoid, plant-derived or otherwise, would be safe and lawful. For certain cannabinoids, such as Delta-8 THC, the available data raises serious concerns about potential harm. For other cannabinoids, there is little or no available information concerning the safety of their use in food. No cannabinoid, plant-derived or otherwise, and I'm sure they were referring to the semi-synthetic or synthetic, however you want to term it, is approved for use in any food as an additive. Moreover, we know of no basis to conclude that any intended use in food of any cannabinoid satisfies that criteria for GRAS, which is generally recognized as safe status. So they're basically breaking the Food and Drug, and that's where I alluded earlier. It's like there's laws in place, but why is there this lack of will? I mean, is this industry this powerful that we just let them go? Doesn't matter, but God forbid if we don't pay our taxes or not pay a speeding ticket. I mean, you know what I'm saying? There's this double standard about following the law that's not applied to the quote-unquote cannabis industry. And I use that term. I include hemp and marijuana.
Jesse, more than 11% of U.S. 12th graders used psychoactive Delta 8 THC last year, and that was by the Keck School of Medicine from USC, and the doctor involved in that was Laura LeBlanc. She's no relative of yours, is she?
No, but we're kindred spirits, I'm sure. Maybe you never know. I mean, I've got a family tree that my cousin gave me. It goes back from 1643 from France to Nova Scotia. we got exiled from Nova Scotia because the Acadians wouldn't pledge allegiance to the Queen, and then wound up in Louisiana and elsewhere. So I don't. Who knows?
And now you have a Texas drawl.
Yeah,
it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, I didn't mean to digress, but
no,
be.
It's okay. We have time to digress. That's why we do a long form show.
So my question, too, is because I work with youth primarily, is what I see is we have just normalized all of this.
Yeah.
It's like when you say, do your research, do your research. We can't get parents to neither come out to any forum that we do, nor will they do any research. So sadly, the only education the kids get is what we deliver in the schools. And sometimes that is not, parents are not happy about that because they are probably part of the problem as far as growing illegally and using it illegally. How do we deliver this information in a positive light that people will start paying attention?
Did you want me to comment?
Yeah. How do we get people to see this?
Well, I don't mean to go down this the religious rabbit hole, but it applies whether we like it or not. And if we don't want to go down this road, I don't have to. But you know, after looking at this whole problem with marijuana, THC, now hemp, for almost 10 years, and thinking, you know, like. I grew up in an industry where science dictated decisions. And when I say science, also, you know, looking at the risk, because I was a certified risk assessment practitioner, and also I had to do hazardous operation reviews. You know, whenever you change a product, I don't mean to get in the oil industry, but all of this stuff applies. At the end of the day, industry in general, you have to have some basis, some physical laws you go by, you know, whatever you want to call it. And there's certain things you just don't do there's certain things you have to do to ensure safety, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And for some reason, we're just missing that science, logic, rational thought. It's almost like people are just blinded by, I don't know what, but to me, at the end of the day, it's a spiritual problem. Because what I hear over and over, and I'll leave it at this, and I'll get off my soapbox about preaching, but I hear it over and over. And in fact, one of the attorneys in a testimony that was given recently in Texas said, this is about personal freedom. I'm going to paraphrase it. This is about personal freedom and not about safety. He said that. That's what he was inferring. And I hear it over and over, oh, it's my right, it's my personal freedom. Well, it's not if it impacts other people. And this drug there's a lot of collateral damage when one person uses this drug. I've seen it destroy families. I mean, families are spending close to $300,000 for, I don't know, less than a year of rehab recovery. I mean, I've heard story after story. Some parents can't even afford it, and instead of enjoying their retirement, they're having to care for 30-something-year-old young adult who's just totally out of it. I mean, still, right. Even though they're not using it. It's really sad. But we just need to realize that there's no such thing as absolute freedom. And just like I can't go on the top of my roof and decide I'm free to do whatever I want, I'm going to jump off. Well, if I jump off, I could probably wind up with two broken legs and maybe even die. Well, when you jump off the roof of, you know, THC use, it's going to catch up with you sooner or later. And people need to realize that, you know, there is a higher power. There are right and wrong. And I don't care what religion you are, being sober-minded and having rational thought is one of those rules that, you know, God put in place. And people aren't following that. I think that's part of the problem. People need to realize that there is a higher power. There are absolutes. There are all rules you need to live by. Otherwise, you're going to have what we have today, total chaos.
And there are evil people out there that are using the human condition, and they're putting powdered glass and grit, sugar water and adhesives, synthetic terpenes and synthetic cannabinoids into their products that people are consuming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, boys and girls, we have to take a really swift break. And I'm going to go out with a little Neil Diamond tune. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'd like to deny the fact that pot was the beginning of my usage of drugs. It's there as a fact. It was the beginning of my using of drugs. It was the first thing I touched in the drug field. I was told it was innocent by everybody that surrounded me, people that I looked up to as intellectuals and smart people. And they told me there was nothing wrong with pot. You would never graduate to anything else. Now I can walk up the street here about a block and see these same people, as intellectual as I thought they were, using heroin. I can't see myself ever using it again.
La la la, pot, pot, give me some pot. Yeah, what you are, you can be what you're not. Hip, hip, you wanna be hip. You know it all if you don't take a trip. Pot, pot.
Accidentally smoked pesticides or PCP the year before I left for college. Everything looked like a deep fried meme. I think somebody laced my weed. I didn't do it to myself, I promise. My mama warned me about little pills and older men's strawberry fields that never end. She did her time. Somehow escaped that clawing hand, a strength I'll never understand. That iron grip can get so tight. What if I broke?
Yes, what could possibly be in it that would be bad? Bill was getting a lesson during the commercial about why they would put glass in it.
Or iron grit is—it's all about monetary. You know, make the weed heavier, and you can sell it for more money. Don't have to put as much weed in the bag when you got other stuff, adulterants in there.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Related to this, can we go down one rabbit hole? It might take 3 minutes.
We have a half hour and some change.
You know, we focus on, you know, the horns of THC. When I use that, it includes any of the variants, derivatives. You know, related to psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, CHS, et cetera, et cetera. But there's one thing that I found that I find fascinating is, and this is available online if you do German study on antisocial personality disorder and cannabis. Okay, you know, something you can find it readily. But there's a 2008 German study. It showed they had 99, and this is just sort of a correlation, but I think Joe can testify to this, but it alludes to them putting glass filings and metal in this stuff. But okay, so it showed that they had 99 cannabis users involved in this study. Guess what percentage of them exhibited antisocial personality disorder? And I'm going to define that after y'all try to guess. Give me a couple guesses on what percent exhibited that personality disorder.
98
out of 99. 90%. Close.
98%.
Okay. Yeah, 90%. Well, I think you're right in a way, but I'll leave it at that. So, what is antisocial personality disorder? So, I'm going to just read real quick. It's also known as sopography, but involves a persistent pattern of callousness towards others and a disregard for social norms and laws. Depending on the severity, they may have difficulty exhibiting empathy or caring for others. A weak conscience or moral compass allows them to deceive and manipulate those around them. They can also be hostile and impulsive, and they may not feel remorse for their actions. They're prone to self-destructive acts and may experience frequent legal troubles. This is a paraphrase from Mayo Clinic has a similar definitions about what antisocial personality disorder. And I want to say, you know, you ask yourself, and yet it's a correlation. Correlation doesn't mean causation. But I see this over and over, especially listening to parents' behaviors, et cetera. And then you see it in some of the mass shootings we've had recently, or shootings. You know, these people, I mean, you know, the Minnesota shooter, he worked at a medical cannabis facility. And you just wonder, you know, is this more of a correlation? Is this more of a causation rather than correlation? Because, I mean, this is like dead on. Yeah, it may not kill them, but it does affect their, I guess, outlook on them, on life, and especially their fellow human beings. Because, you know, what I've found is they have a total disregard for law. They have false memories. And what amazes me, and it gets the parents so infuriated in these testimonies, one of the people, one of the vocal opponents of SB3, he would say that these hemp-derived products are not synthetic. And it's like, whoa, wait. And nobody would challenge him. And, you know, you want to get up there and say, that's not true, but you can't. But you've got to stomach through that, and nobody challenges him. So he gets that false statement out there that these hemp products are not synthetic. They're all natural. And that's not true. And if you look at the certificates of analysis of the products he sells, got Delta 8 in it, et cetera, et cetera. Delta 8, yeah, it may occur naturally in a plant, but the Delta 8 they're using in their products, they've got to manufacture that. And if you've got to manufacture it using an acid, an organic solvent, that's not natural. It's synthetic, and then they try to make the argument, well, it's semi-synthetic, whatever you want to do.
Because solvents belong in the garage, not the kitchen.
Exactly.
I mean, no one has solvents in their kitchen unless it's under the sink.
It's like, please. It's like, it's unbelievable. But this is another thing we need to be concerned about, because something like this could disrupt. Well, you kind of see it. I mean, I'm sure you see it in California. Total disregard for the law. No moral compass. And why is it tied to this drug culture? It's telling us something that we're deciding to ignore.
Well, for people who
but, you know, society.
Yeah, and so for people that are thinking, well, I don't know. I mean, I read about a few of them who were involved with this. We have a whole list on the website: shooters, terrorists, and mass killers who use marijuana, and the list goes way back. I mean, this isn't just happening in the last few months. This is, let's see, hold on, let me be factual here, since you're an engineer and stuff. 1978.
Well,
the son of Jim Jones, who led 400 to suicide at Jonestown in Guyana, confirmed that Jones used LSD and marijuana. So,
well,
there you go.
I'll go further back than that.
Okay.
1973, Mark Essex, New Orleans. I dug up the police report, not I, but I had to contact the New Orleans archives in volume 2 to use the search term marijuana, because it's in PDF form, thank God. It comes up several times, and they found it on his person.
Oh, would you send me that, and I'll post it?
Sure.
Yeah. Email it to me, and I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, I put together something for Dr. Finn and others. I sent it to Alex Berenson, too. But, yeah, I'll forward you the email I sent to Alex Berenson, because it goes into a lot of detail. I had to put it on Google Drive because it's a very large file, and I'll just give you access to it.
Okay, thanks.
And then you can download it. It's too large. The file is too large to email.
No worries.
And it's volumes 1 and 2. Volume 1 gets into the nitty-gritty of it, and it actually happened over several days. And it was this heroic Marine Corps helicopter pilot who basically, I guess, gently borrowed one from the U.S. Marine Corps and basically allowed some police snipers to, it was armored, get into it. And they were able, that's how they, I remember watching it because it was 1973. I was a young 20-year-old, and I remember it was in the winter, and I remember watching it real time on TV. It was just crazy, but it's just recently that I kind of started doing some digging, and it's like, I wonder if that was, if pot was involved in this, you know, was this guy a user, and he was. Along with the people he identified with, and it was sort of a radical group that he got radicalized, and once you juxtapose that with, you know, these recent shooters, It's like, whoa, you know, we're missing something here. We need to look at this deeper before we start legalizing it left and right.
Jesse, as you're aware, we're tracking the last 100, I'm going to call them famous, but active shooters in the U.S. that have murdered people. And there is a common thread, and it is marijuana being used by all mm-hmm. of them. The problem for us is to be able to get the toxicology results, and the coroners are not testing for the toxicology, the amount of THC or whatever other product is in the system of the shooter. So that's one of the things that we've been demanding. And Dr. Ronit Lev, who's now at the Office of National Drug Control Policy, has just taken that report. So if you have any additional information, I know you're in the list of emails that go around, please send just a very short excerpt of anybody that's involved in those kind of things, because we're trying to take it in front of Congress and actually do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, this 1973 Mark Essex case is classic. And he killed people over several days. I forgot the number, but it's a pretty high number. So it's just like, it's not the bare minimum. What is it, three or four people, and it's called a quote-unquote mass murder? No. I mean, it's horrendous what he did.
And that story is online if anybody wants to see it, about the Marine Corps colonel Army colonel that took the Marine Corps helicopter. It's a pretty incredible video.
No, he was a Marine colonel. Actually, my brother was in the Marines. He flew the same kind of helicopter, a CH-46. And he actually met the guy, I think, when he was in flight school in Pensacola. But, no, he was a Marine.
Marine. Okay, I stand corrected.
He really needs to be recognized more so than he was. And, in fact, he almost got court-martialed. I think the mayor had to step in and giving him some special dispensation because they tried to accuse him of stealing a U.S. government helicopter. It's amazing. It would make an awesome movie, a really awesome movie.
I'm going to be very interested to see if we can find out, was there any toxicology done on Charlie Kirk's shooter?
Okay, yeah. I thought you were going to ask Mark Essex. I tried to get the toxicology. All of that stuff was destroyed in Hurricane Katrina and a flood. Mm. So all that's available is, you can infer. I mean, no, there's no toxicology, but you can infer what's in Volume 2 that he smoked weed because of where they found it in his car. I think I don't know if his house, but definitely his car. They had, you know, matchbox. They found an unburnt, you know, a partially burned in the ashtray, et cetera, et cetera. So it clearly shows that he was using. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, this Charlie Kirk, I'm almost like 99% positive. Somewhere along the way, some drug or drugs were involved.
Yeah, it seems unlikely that it would dodge that one. There have been so many. Just so many links. So that kind of go back on the hemp side of it, since we don't have another break until the top of the hour, we get to just keep talking. bonus. Anyway, I just, for people who think, well, hemp is in the Constitution and the Constitution was written on hemp, and hemp is just for fabric and paper and stuff like that. You just hear this all the time. That's always the big pushback.
That's their argument. They don't have anything else to argue.
Yeah. So opening the door to this, how quick is the conversion? Okay, so you allow legalized growing of hemp. How quick does that become something that you find on a shelf filled with nail polish remover? That's what I always think of when you say these chemicals. How tough is that? How difficult? Broken.
Did you want me to answer?
Yeah.
That?
I'm like, I broke the show.
Well, I mean, kind of rephrase your question. I was trying to follow where you were going.
Well, like, yeah, you know, because this comes up all the time, right?
From seed to product.
Right.
Oh, yeah, seed to product. Seed to sale, right? We're going
to
follow
seed to sale.
And it's just hemp. What is everybody so excited
about?
Oh,
yeah. I
how tough is it to get from just hemp, right? So you've legalized just hemp. so they can make clothes and paper and other cheerful things out of. And then how much effort does it take to convert that into a saleable drug product?
Well, I mean, that was my whole, what we started off with was the basic wording from the 2018 Farm Bill. These chemical processes, you get a PhD chemist, and they have, if you look online, they have all of these autoclaves, et cetera, that they use to do this conversion process. It's not that difficult. It's definitely commercially viable. But I guess what...
So basically,
it's all about the wording. Go ahead.
We could go on YouTube and learn how to do it.
You can. Unfortunately, a lot of this you can't. You can go on YouTube, or you can look online, and they ask, you know, you can, like Joe was saying, we could do it in our garage if you really wanted to. But I mean, they have some sophisticated machinery, I guess you could say, you can buy online. You can see it. I wouldn't say you can buy it online, but there's companies that advertise, you know, like emulsification processes. A lot of these guys hire PhD chemists to do this. I mean, a lot of them have that on their staff to, you know, to manipulate these chemicals. And it's like they take pride in, okay, how many different variants can we do? Like I said, the latest is hydrogenated THC, HHC, and they also acetylate that. They have HHCO, and they do that because, you know how plant oils, they do go rancid. They add some extra hydrogen to it, and it gets hydrogenated and increases the shelf life. So it'll last longer. That's one of the reasons they do that. And the other funny thing about that is they have to use what they call a noble metal as a catalyst. Again, a catalyst isn't consumed. So these noble metals, what it is, they don't give up electrons. A lot of them they use in catalytic converters, like palladium. But that's one of the metals they use. So I've noticed on certificates of analysis, they don't check for any of these metals, and you can get toxicity from these quote-unquote noble metals. They're called noble because they're under where they are on a periodic chart, and also they don't, I guess you could say, corrode or rust, you know, in layman's term. They don't give up any of the electrons. Sort of like, they don't use gold, but it's sort of like gold. You know, it doesn't tarnish like other metals do. Nickel's another one they use, although it does tarnish, but you can get heavy metal poisoning, or metal poisoning, I shouldn't say heavy metal, from a lot of the noble metals, but they have to use that as a catalyst to convert THC into this HHC or hydrogenated THC.
Jesse, I read that there's now dozens of variants. I mean, they're coming out with new
ones
every month.
It's hard to keep track, I'm going to be honest with you. Phil Drum sent me something recently, and it just kind of blew me away. And I even did one presentation. I said, this is not an exhaustive list because they're constantly coming up with new items. I mean, one of the, I think Dr. Madreas with Harvard, she made this comment once about these PhD chemists. For them, it's sort of like a game, you know, sort of like, oh, I can do a Rubik's Cube in 10 seconds. You know, they find this as a challenge, and, you know, they're always looking for new chemicals that they can make that, you know, for these companies that they work for to, you know, get people intoxicated. That's all I can say. It's sort of a game, you know, when you get to that point. It's like, okay, let's see what we can do here.
The science is kind of complicated. These guys doing this, there's a ton of money in it, and so it's worth finding some smart... some smart chemists to come up with this stuff. But if your base product is, you know, fields and fields and fields of hemp, and you can move it around legally, sure makes it easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically organic chemistry at the end of the day. You know, they have inorganic chemistry, which is like your petroleum. I'm sorry, not petroleum, but I don't want to get off on a tangent between... inorganic and organic, but it's all organic chemistry. I was wrong about the petroleum, but it's all organic chemistry. And I mean, organic chemistry is somewhat complicated. I know the basics of it, I've had a lot of inorganic chemistry, but the organic chemistry, you know, it's pretty challenging to understand it. I almost took a course just to know, but I was able to get a study course my son had because he's a nurse, and I kind of read through that and kind of got the gist of it all. But again, the way to look at it is I'm giving you a set of Lego blocks, different colors, and you can manipulate that into all kinds of things. And basically through using catalysts and acids and heat or cold or whatever, you can, through some chemical process, you can, instead of using your hands with Lego blocks, they're using these chemicals to manipulate this, the structure of the molecule.
And Jesse, they're not restricted from the banking industry because it's a farm product, and so they're using all the money systems to be able to benefit themselves, unlike the cannabis industry, which has to fight for banking. So it's no wonder that hemp is just going to take off as far as an intoxicant until they put controls on it, and I don't see the government putting the controls on it that are necessary, and why your governor went down and allowed it in your state. And it's going to be the ruination of our country. There's no doubt in my mind.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah, I always tell people about the form bill wording, how insidious it is. And a lot of times I get a blank stare even when I read it to them. But I think after this, you know, hour and a half that we talked, you can, if you go back to it and you see any derivative, extract, isomer, you can see how that language allowed these quote unquote loopholes. It's like, was this purposeful? I have a hard time believing it wasn't. And I have a hard time believing that Mitch McConnell and whoever else quote unquote drafted it actually drafted it. It had to be somebody with a chemical background. Oh, yeah, an acid, you know, because of THCA loophole. You see where, I mean, maybe it's me, I don't know, but do y'all maybe have a better understanding now after we went through, I mean, we kind of did a deep dive, fairly good deep dive, but you see how the wording in that farm bill is so...
Well, and it was smart, put it in the farm bill, because the farm bill is massive, it has to pass, and that's a blip on the radar in a farm bill.
Yeah, and you know what else? The last point I want to make, too, is what's really amazing is you go back to tobacco, big tobacco, and Jeffrey Wigand, he worked for a company that was in Kentucky, and his testimony just decimated the tobacco industry in Kentucky. And guess who comes up with the hemp bill? Mitch McConnell, who represents a senator, Kentucky, okay? And then Paul Rand, if I'm not mistaken, he's also tied to Kentucky, and he's the one who kind of shot, remember the latest round of bills to basically close all these loopholes? I mean, what is it with Kentucky and these,
their crop. I mean.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's just interesting.
That's where tobacco comes from.
That connection. It goes from tobacco to hemp, which is even, to me, it's one thing to lose, it's one thing to have, get cancer and have your lungs go out when you're maybe 60, 70 years old. I mean, I lost my grandparents to tobacco. But it's a whole nother thing when you're in your a teen, early adult, where, I mean, I just heard a story today from a good friend. This young lady did gummies before, took three gummies. I don't know how strong they were. And now she's got permanent schizophrenia. And she, you know, her degree that she had, she can't even work. Basically, her parents are having to take care of her like you would for an elderly parent. But, you know, she's probably in her 20s or 30s now. I mean, what is it? That's how dangerous this stuff is. It's worse than tobacco.
Jesse, yeah. I'm working a case in Southern California right now of a beauty queen who got a gummy, did not use THC products, got a gummy from her boyfriend, which was stolen from the nurse mother and ate the gummy and 30 minutes later stood atop a bridge in Southern California and jumped off and was run over 7 times. Did the marijuana killer or the THC killer or did the getting run over 7 times killer? And so there's a lawsuit going on in that case right now and actually a homicide investigation, which is just closed out. So it's a dangerous product. I don't care who tells you, what industry person tells you it's safe, it's natural. It's all a lie. And people should, and we're waiting for the lawsuits, successful lawsuits against the cannabis industry, because once that really starts to take off and the lawyers get hungry, then maybe we'll see some controls put on the industry, and that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, but it's a shame we can't look at science and use the existing laws we have now to put this industry, you know, to put a stop to this. Again, I don't mean to backtrack, but, you know, I read you the FDA warning letter, mm-hmm. what it says.
Right.
I mean, even if we could get it out of edibles and drinks and that, I mean, that would be a major hurdle to cross. I mean, it's there. The laws are there. Why isn't anybody doing it?
It's the enforcement.
That's the biggest question and troubling issue that I see is why is there this malaise or general lack of enforcement? I don't know. I mean, yeah, y'all are doing a great job out there, Joe, enforcing the law, but, you know, we're talking about further up the food chain. We're talking about the federal government, and they're doing nothing.
Yeah, well, there's there's a lot of stuff going on at the exact same time, so there's that. I just think, honestly, the public drives a lot of this, you know, and you have a huge percentage of the public that this does. Okay, this is not what I believe, but this is what I am told on a regular basis. It doesn't affect me, and I'm like, no, wait.
Well,
but it does.
Yeah, see that? Because I deal with DUI drivers all the time, and nobody wants to. They all want to believe it doesn't affect me. It does. My child would never.
Oh,
I'm like, well, my child was a passenger. He didn't drink, and he was killed. So don't ever say, even in this industry, that it would never affect you, because it will. Your grandchild, your child will be out on the road with a DUI driver. They will be handed something at school. Oh, just try it. It's good. Yeah.
And like in so many shows we've talked about before, it'll look like a gummy bear sitting on the counter of someone's home. And surprise.
Brownies.
It's not. It doesn't always have the smell. Like, you know, when we were in high school, brownies, they smelled.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a smell. You knew you were eating something that wasn't the real thing. But a lot of this stuff doesn't.
Nope.
It's in packages that looks like candy. Little kids are getting a hold of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look toward the grows, and for people who maybe are unfamiliar with the program, if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, on the top bar, click the tab that says pot, and we have a ton of photos on there, and those are local. So here in Northern California, where this stuff is grown, I mean, it's grown other places too, but the big growing sites here in Northern California, if you think for 1 second this isn't getting into your water table, the massive amounts of chemicals, you're looking at murder,
illegal
human trafficking, you're looking at chemicals that were banned in this country years ago. And, you know, if that doesn't move you, you know, they're skinning and eating dogs. So even if you just want to go there, maybe you think all this stuff is great. How do you feel about animals? You know, there's something to hate for everyone, pretty much. I'm a firm believer that there's something everyone will hate.
We foregoed our forests for the spotted owl, but yet we can't do that the same way for these crows.
I think we can all agree as a group, including you.
Too far away.
I think we can all agree, Jesse, that the best eradication is prevention. And in a perfect world, prevention will reduce the need for the thirst for the use of drugs in our society, and that will put the cartels out of business. And that's the other reason why the Chinese are spraying their marijuana now with fentanyl and other drugs, and the Mexicans are spraying it with fentanyl and other drugs, because they must addict the next generation and population.
Yep, and I do think if people knew that the chemicals that they were ingesting, I truly believe most of the people, just your casual users, have no clue.
Oh, God, no.
No, they think it's like candy with some drugs in it. And it's
well,
like,
and you're going to go into a pot shop. They're not going to tell you.
There's that. Do you guys have legalized marijuana in Texas, Jay?
I don't think so. Medical.
There's no difference.
Well, I'm just,
so the camel's nose is under the tent.
From a Texas perspective, quote unquote, medical is what you can get. They call it the teacup program, Texas Compassionate Use Program, which they actually expanded to try to get the Senate Bill 3, the THC ban passed. But it didn't help.
Interesting.
Again,
Yeah, that's too bad, because there is no difference between medical marijuana and regular marijuana. And if they wanted to make it a distinction, I always said, then put it in the pharmacy and have it dosed to you for whatever ailment you're claiming. And they don't want that. They want to be able to go and buy it as much as they want. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an addiction at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, they have
Marinol
if they really need it. And I mean, the FDA dose, I think, is a maximum of 20 milligrams to 10 milligrams twice a day.
Yep.
I mean, they have a whole laundry list of side effects on the, if you look at the FDA literature for Marinol. But yeah, that's what I've always thought. If you really need this stuff, and it's sort of, Dr. Randall made a comment the other day, you know, it's sort of like a last tier, especially CBD, sort of the last line of defense. You know, if nothing else works, let's try this. The public's been hoodwinked at the end of the day. Just, again, y'all brought this up earlier. It's just tobacco. I mean, I know Kevin Sabet always says this, and he's absolutely right. It's just tobacco 2.0. Same, they even use the same terminology.
Yep.
Quote unquote delivery device. Instead of a nicotine delivery device, it's a THC delivery device.
Jesse, I'm interested to know whether in your medical marijuana industry there, do they go all the way back to allow industrial grows that are tested? Do you see them like they are here in California? Or is it just illegal stuff coming across from Oklahoma?
I can't comment on that. I don't know. I don't want to misstate anything. I mean, I really don't know. I haven't done any research on that.
If you were going to take a page from the playbook on, you know, just from your perspective, how they kind of beat big tobacco, you know, how that tide was turned, how does that apply here, or what would we look for next if we were going to try to support that?
You know, I'm going to use the word to fill drum. We need another Jeffrey Wigand. We need somebody high up the food chain in either the, you know, when I say cannabis industry, I'm referring to both marijuana and hemp industry. Somebody way up the food chain. It could be like a PhD chemist and said, you know, enough's enough. This is sick. I'm not going to do this anymore. And basically, you know, lay it out. You know, I thought Ann Hassel was going to be that quote unquote whistleblower. But for some reason, nobody listens to her. But some of the things that she, I think y'all may have interviewed her. I'm not sure. I thought you did. But yeah, some of the things that she exposes is just it's again insidious. I mean, how do we allow this? I don't know. They get more of a pass in the tobacco industry. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I know that we have like a minute and a half left, or a minute. So rather than cut you off, we can keep talking till the end. But I thought we should thank you while we had time to do it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah,
Jay. Yeah, Yeah, no problem. I'm the third. That's why I go by Jay.
Okay. Yeah, that is confusing.
My mom and dad call me Jay. Yeah, that's why I'm Jay. That's the technical reason. I was number three. Yeah.
It's better than being called three, I guess.
I was glad to do it. Hopefully it wasn't over anybody's head. And, you know, if y'all need a replay or go over some other stuff, I'll be more than happy. Or have a, you know, have me and Dr. Finn and others as a kind of a panel asking questions or a Q&A.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're always up for it. There is not enough education going out about this, and it takes a little bit to get it out there. So I do hope people go and listen to the programming that's available, because we have a lot of amazing people on that list. And thank you for adding to our voices on this topic. We have to run away. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.